Bet the Board in conjunction with NASCAR presents Stay Green. Stay Green is your first stop for all the metrics, matchups, and money-making opportunities at the track each race week. This is Stay Green, the NASCAR betting podcast. Here are your hosts, Todd Furman and racing analyst Chris Wormy.
Welcome into the Stay Green podcast, a Bet the Board production in conjunction with NASCAR. I am your host, Todd Furman, or at least that's typically the case. No hosting responsibilities this week as I'm off gallivanting, trying to take advantage of a little bachelor party festivities my own. Otherwise, it would be inexcusable to miss the show. But I know we are in tremendous hands with Worm here driving the bus. Four races to go. NASCAR brings the show to Las Vegas. Some outstanding tracks for them this elimination phase of the race for the playoffs. And Worm, you've always told me you like to be the star of the show. Well, this time the floor is yours and I'm not standing in the way. Any direction you want to go in stage one, stage two, and stage three, bring us on home, my friend.
Well, folks, you heard it there. You just have me tonight. And that's because Todd's in Tennessee this week with pain. So it's just you and I, and I'll tell you what, I am excited to not have to fight for any podium time on this podcast. We'll follow the same outline for the show where you have three stages. Stage one, we'll recap the Roval, see what we've learned. Stage two will be some betting strategy and some playoff discussion. And stage three will be all about this week's race in Vegas where we kick off the round of eight. Let's get through the formalities here. You can follow Todd at Todd Furman on Twitter. You can follow myself at Chris Wormy 15. That's ChrisWerme 15. And you can follow the podcast at Bet the Board Podcast. Now, before we get into stage one, I would like to discuss some of the news that just came out before recording. We're recording on Wednesday. It's about 5 o'clock out here on the Pacific Coast. So the news that Bowman's going to be out for the next three races, I don't think that this comes as a surprise to anybody. I'm actually kind of happy that he went ahead and decided that this wasn't going to be a great idea for him to get involved in these next three races. And there's no reason. He might come back at Phoenix, but at this point, I think he should just kind of take some time. I'm proud of him for coming out and saying he wasn't healthy. I think it's important for athletes to feel comfortable to be able to do this. So no surprise there. The surprising news that I did read on Twitter as I was about to fire up this recording was some of Tony Stewart's comments. And he said, if it weren't for the fact that I've got an appearance that I have to make, I wouldn't be at another NASCAR race for the rest of the year. I wouldn't waste my time. Yikes. I've kind of been wondering where Tony's been standing on some of the issues going on with NASCAR, and it appears that he doesn't even want to waste his time at a race. So there's that. I'm just going to go ahead and let that sit there. But let's get going with stage one. Let's break down the Roval. I will say this, full disclosure, not a good race for me. I went 2-6 in matchups, and this was my second worst race of the year financially. I'll get into my explanations and my rant later on that, but Chris Bell wins in dramatic fashion in what was otherwise a boring ass race, in my opinion. I'm not gonna lie, I was falling asleep at one point. Literally, I had changed the channel on the race, mainly because I saw no way for my bets to flip and for me to win them. And to be honest, my boy Joe Scoverins caddying for Tom Kim, and he was in the final group with Patrick Cantlay, and I thought it'd be better maybe just to cheer him on because my bets had zero chance. We just didn't see much passing. And I think that whenever there's no passing and there's not a lot of tire fall off and there's no comers and goers, road courses can really lose their luster, and especially when you have no cautions other than the stage breaks, it gets tough. So track position was everything, and until late in the race there wasn't much going on. I'm going to break down this race into three separate races. It's almost like there were three races within the race. There was stage one, and then there was stage two up until the very end, or towards the end of stage three, to when they threw the caution. So that's like the second race. And then there was the final race, which was, you know, that third leg where they threw a couple cautions and you saw guys pit and take some tires. So this stage one of the race, Logano and Byron out front and really pulled away. It looked like these cars were going to be the two fastest cars all day. And, you know, they were able to separate themselves by a few seconds from third place, which I think was AJ Allmendinger at the time. And I anticipated that those guys, with the position that they're in the playoffs, that they would take their stage points. Logano would take the stage win, get the bonus point. And I was right. I was also right about a lot of the guys that decided to stay out and not flip the stage and get those stage points. When that means Cindric, that means Briscoe. Some of those guys were able to capture some of those points. Now, I anticipated Logano and Byron, after they get shuffled back into the 24th or 25th place because they didn't flip the stage, I thought that those three or four lap fresher tires might actually benefit them and they'd actually start working their way up through the field, maybe get to 12th or 13th place, where then they would be able to flip the stage in stage two, come out with the track position that they needed, and then have a chance to go win the race. Well, I was dead ass wrong. I'll tell you what, those cars did not move up at all. And it was from the start of stage two till, you know, kind of the caution late in stage three, it looked like the best car was AJ Allmendinger. And he was able to get out to a lead that both Logano and Byron weren't able to get out to. So, you know, it was Elliott and Reddick and all the non-playoff guys that were able to flip stage two and still keep their track position. I mean, the guys like Byron and Logano had so much trouble getting through the field, they opted to not even flip the stage for two reasons. One, they weren't close enough to the leaders. They were still going to go a lap down. You know, that's crazy to think that they could still go a lap down. So why risk that, right? You don't want to go a lap down. And the other reason is, well, they might as well stay out and take points because they're still going to restart in 20th place. So you might as well scrape up a few points in stage two as well, because you know you're going to be back in traffic anyway. So this was so hard to pass. I think it was the hardest of all of the comparable road courses we've seen this year, to the point where if you decided to take points in any stage, you had zero chance of winning. And I don't remember that in the past. I do remember in stage two, if you do take that risk, you stay out in stage two to get points and you don't flip that stage. I do remember in the past that it'd be really hard to get back up there for the win. But geez, these guys couldn't even flip from stage one, and they were non-factors. I mean, Logano and Byron, it was almost like they weren't even there. They were just happy to move on. They were non-factors to win the race. And these were two cars that looked incredible in practice. I mean, Logano's comments we're like, hey, it's going to be hard. We're going to go out there and we're going to get points in stage one. And then in stage two, we're hopefully going to flip and get the track position and go for the win. I don't know if that's going to work, but I'll tell you what, we have a fast race car and everything's easier with a fast race car. Well, Joey, it didn't matter if you had a fast race car, because if you were pinned back in or mired back in traffic, you had zero chance of moving up. Now, let's talk about the end of this, you know, the end of stage two and then into stage three. After green flag cycles through on that last stop, I mean, Chase Elliott did Chase Elliott things. This team has just operated on a way higher level. They pitted before Allmendinger and were able to stretch that massively with the one or two laps of green flag laps with fresh tires. And same with Tyler Reddick. And Tyler Reddick had a slow stop and was just, it's like those guys just didn't even put up a fight. And I don't think Chase Elliott really passed a car under green, but he was leading by 4 or 5 seconds by the time, you know, that caution at the very end of the race came out. It was almost like Chase just did nothing wrong. And this was kind of the, kind of encompasses his entire season this year, where he's just done that week in and week out. And it was just the typical Chase Elliott road course 9-team race. until the caution came out. Now, when the caution came out with, I think it was four to go, you knew that when tires didn't matter, that not many guys were actually going to come down and take tires. There's one guy that needed to, and that was Chris Bell. I think he was running ninth at the time. And everybody is all over Adam Stevens for such a great race call. In my opinion, if Chris Bell did not pit there in ninth, knowing he needed to win, if I'm Joe Gibbs, I walk down there and I fire Adam Stevens on the spot. And I don't think he should ever crew chief in the Cup Series again. There's no reason to give Adam Stevens any credit for this. It's the most obvious call ever. He had to win the race. He wasn't going to do it from ninth. You might as well go get tires. So let's just get that out of the way. It was an easy call. We don't need to crown this guy as the best crew chief ever. I think that might be a little bit of overkill. To be honest, typical late road course BS. And that's what it is. It's RC BS, if you want to call it. You know, you have the chase spin. You have overly aggressive drivers trying to make the playoffs. You have Cole Custer slowing down for a fictitious tire. Sometimes these late cautions that they have in road course races, it just turns to hell in a handbasket. And, you know, you're sitting there just hoping your ticket's cash. And that's no fun because you could have capped a great race and someone like Chase spins out because of an overzealous driver trying to get a finish or trying to make the playoffs, which I understand. It's good racing, but I don't know. I don't think Chase necessarily deserved that finish. My major takeaways are, there weren't any ways that my matchups that I was losing were going to win, like at any point. As soon as I had Logano and Byron in a few matchups, as soon as they were back in traffic, I didn't know even how they would get back to the front. So if next year, I want to be able to take something away with this. If I think someone's going to be racing for stage points, and let's just say the car stays the same, I don't think it will, but if the car stays the same and there's anyone that has a chance of racing for points, you cannot bet them to win the race, or you can't even take them in matchups, in my opinion. It's just too unpredictable, and you get late in these races, and guys are driving through the rearview mirror. They have their crew chiefs telling them exactly how many points they need to score, where they need to end up in order to make the playoffs, and that's all that matters to a lot of those guys. And I was dumb for investing in matchups on Logano and Byron, even though I thought they had the two best cars in practice. The way that the race strategy played out and the way that there was no tire fall off, and with this car making it very difficult to pass, it was impossible to cash those matchups. So the one thing I will do, and it did work for me pretty well, was betting on guys in stage one matchups that I knew were going to take points. So for example, I definitely took Cindric over Reddick in stage one, and also Blaney over Chase Elliott, because I knew that both Reddick and Chase were going to flip the stage, which means that they're going to go back to 16th or 17th place at the end of stage one. And you're going to see guys like Cindric and Blaney, who need the points, stay out. So I did cash both of those matchups, which was nice and very predictable. I think that it was quite obvious that those guys, the 12 and the 2, were going to stay out and get those stage points and get a higher finish than both Reddick and Elliott. You know, I think when you're going to bet on guys to win this race next year, it has to be guys that just don't need points. Chase didn't need points. Reddick didn't need points. AJ Allmendinger didn't need points this year. He might next year. And also another guy that had a great race was Kevin Harvick out of nowhere. Oh, by the way, Kevin Harvick had a great race and easily could have won that race. I still think that if the caution doesn't come out, the second caution doesn't come out, I do think that Chris Bell catches Harvick anyway. And I don't think Harvick puts up a fight. I think that Harvick just pulls over and lets that 20 get to victory lane. Overall, it was a pretty boring race and maybe a no bet race for me next year if we don't see passing at the other three comp tracks, which would be COTA, Road America, and Indy. I don't really know that Watkins Glen transfers much, so I'm going to kind of leave that out of the comp tracks for now. I'll just leave it at COTA, Road America, and Indy when it comes to the Roval. So that's kind of my take on the race. I'm not going to get into the Custer stuff and the caution stuff. You know what? I think you have to understand that these guys are going to make team decisions. And I know that it doesn't work out like Formula One where they have team orders, but there's a lot of money involved and you definitely want to see your teammates move on. So Custer slowing down. Okay, whatever. Obviously the cardboard on the track, like why do we have those there? Let's just get rid of them. I guess that's all I want to say in stage one about that race. So moving forward, it just, you know, hopefully we see more passing in road course races earlier in the year. So that way I do feel comfortable, you know, making bets coming into this race next year. But that being said, it's definitely important to understand the strategy and the implication of playoff points before you make your wagers. And I didn't do that this year, and I was wrong, and I will learn and get better from it. So I will wave the green-white checkered here for stage one. Again, for those of you listening, be sure to follow Todd Furman on Twitter. Also, you can follow myself at ChrisWerme15. That's ChrisWerme15. And always follow Always follow the podcast at BetTheBoardPod, also on Twitter. Let's get into stage two here, where I want to go over some matchup explanations and breakdowns. And I don't know if many people know that my theory on, you know, betting or gambling is there's really no such thing as a bad bet with the amount of data that we have available, but there is such thing as a bad explanation. And I think that you can twist all the information that we have out there in this world and, if, you know, set it to fit your narrative. So I did have a matchup with a buddy of mine, Skybox, on Twitter, and I respect his opinion when it comes to NASCAR betting. And he was really, really high on Chase Elliott to beat Tyler Reddick at the Roval. And I didn't understand why. And I was actually high on Reddick. So we just had a little friendly wager. Instead of paying that bookie juice, we just worked it out between ourselves. And I will say that I did win the bet, but I don't know that I was right. And those are two very different things. I did win, but I was wrong to be that opinionated on Reddick. And he was also wrong to be that opinionated on Chase. Because here's the deal. It had nothing to do with the bet itself. It had everything to do with the explanations. He thought that since Chase had been great at the Roval the last 3 years and has been super fast on road courses throughout this year and very consistent, that he would beat Tyler Reddick. That was his explanation. My explanation was Tyler Reddick has qualified better than Chase on the three comp tracks and has a better finish. And he was an underdog. That was my reasoning for wanting to bet Tyler Reddick. But here's the deal. We were both wrong. Because a good explanation for this would have been saying something like, well, this matchup is a coin toss, and I'll give the slight edge to Tyler Reddick in qualifying. And the 9, who would be Chase Elliott, hasn't really passed him under green flag conditions on comparable tracks. That's what I should have said. I should have said that this bet is a coin toss, because it really was. It came down to strategy. And whenever your bets are coming down to strategy and you don't know the strategy, well, you're just guessing. And I don't want to guess. The goal here is to be on the right side and to win long run. The same thing for Mark. His explanation should have been pretty much a coin toss. But with Reddick out of the playoffs, maybe the team not clicking on all cylinders, if this race ends up like a normal race, I trust the 9 team more than I trust the 8 team. That would have been a much better explanation than talking about speed of the race car, because the speed was arguably a coin toss. And the reason that it looked like Chase was going to win is because they just operated at a higher level. And it looked like he was going to win, but that's not what happened. He got spun out late, and that RCBS, the road course BS that we have on late race restarts, and he wasn't able to win the race, or wasn't able to win the bet. And he had a terrible finish, and Reddick ended up beating him. But I will say this, even though I won the bet, I wasn't right. And if I sit there with this mentality and I say, you know what, I won, I was right, I will lose money in the long run. Sure. Am I happy to cash that ticket? Absolutely. But moving forward, it's really important that I know that, hey, maybe that wasn't a great bet. I should not use that explanation in the future because it wasn't right. And because of that, I'll get smarter and hopefully make more money in the long run. I want to do a quick playoff overview here. After this, now that we're in the round of eight, and we're going to cut it down to four. And the three races that we have are Vegas, Homestead, and Martinsville, which is, I think, three really, really exciting tracks. If you look at the playoff standings as of right now, Chase Elliott has a massive lead above the cut line. Remember, we're taking four drivers now. He has a 31-point lead over fifth place. Joey Logano has an 11-point lead. Ross Chastain, a 6-point lead. Christopher Bell, a 3-point lead. Then below the cut line, you have Ryan Blaney, -3. William Byron, -3. Denny Hamlin, -5. And Chase Briscoe, -9. Wow, Denny Hamlin, -5. That is shocking. If I had to make some predictions at this point, I would say my final four... Well, you have to include Chase Elliott here. He's got 31 points. I mean, that's almost a race advantage over fifth place. So I imagine Chase Elliott will be very conservative in these early races and kind of point his way in. I expect him to go for stage points. Not that you can have strategy that affects stage points. I mean, I guess you can if there's a caution inside 10 laps to go on a stage. I expect Chase Elliott to go try to lock himself in with a couple of like top five finishes in Vegas and in both stages and, you know, kind of run the same way at Homestead. So that way a track where he's really, really good, which is Martinsville, he can maybe go out there and race for the win with no downside risk. So I think that that's the way that Chase will run this. Logano, Chastain, and Bell, they're all kind of grouped together. I mean, Logano's 11 to the good, Chastain 6 to the good, and Bell is 3 to the good. My issues with Logano and Chastain is they haven't shown a ton of speed lately. Logano did last week in practice and qualifying, but he couldn't make any hay from the back. Chastain, we haven't seen speed out of him in weeks. You know, he's just been kind of riding around. I mean, I think that that one team was probably the fastest car the first 6-7 weeks of the season. And I know that internally the team told him maybe chill out on, you know, the aggressive driving style. Maybe he pulled back a little bit too much. But now that the rubber is really meeting the road here in these playoffs, I expect Chastain to really step it up. When it comes to Blaney and Byron, I think that they're both really similar. Blaney and Byron both have had speed, especially at the mile and a halfs. I think Byron's done a better job of making passes, which I think is really, really important. Blaney has, although he has speed in qualifying, he doesn't have the ability to drive back through the field. So every mistake is just magnified or, you know, multiplied because it's so hard for him to go from the back to the front. I think Byron's done a much better job of going from the back to the front. And if he has speed, he can kind of make his way back up to the top five. But the issue with Byron is sometimes he unloads and he's just non-existent the entire race. And if that happens, you know, that team is in trouble. And you know early on in the week when Byron's in trouble. It's not like they just turn it around on a dime. That being said, if they unload fast, look out. They're a threat to win. I'm pretty sure he's won at, I don't know if he's won at Vegas, but I know he's won at Homestead. And that was also the old car with the high downforce. So it'll be interesting to see how this car races at Homestead. I'm super excited. It's one of my favorite tracks, and that'll be next week. But looking at Denny Hamlin and Chase Briscoe, I expect Denny to make it into the final four just based on speed and his grit. And listen, if I'm going to go to battle and I need to pick a NASCAR driver, Denny Hamlin's number one. I mean, that guy just, he's a fighter and he's going to claw and scrap and go the extra mile to get into to get in the championship race. So I expect him to get in. I think, you know, Chase Briscoe is definitely the weakest link when it comes to finishes at these tracks. However, one thing we don't know is how this car is going to react at Homestead. And if there's a place where Chase can maybe get that high line going. He's a dirt track guy. I trust him as a driver. He was, you know, he could have easily won the dirt race at Bristol this year, and also at Charlotte, which was a long race but also a high line race where there's a little bit of tire wear. You know, he had a chance to beat Kyle Larson there at the end, and he just, you know, lost it a little bit. The back end of the car, you know, took off and he spun out. But if he somehow figures out a way to get it done at Homestead, he's going to have to win, in my opinion. I don't think he has the speed week in and week out to point his way in. I think he's going to need a win, and it'll have to come at Homestead. And we've seen how good he is at Phoenix. So he won that race earlier this year. So nobody wants to see him racing for that, for the championship, just because he was so good at Phoenix. Now, albeit it was a long time ago, but the kid's a race car driver, and I guess I'd have to say I'd still be a little shocked to see him win at Homestead and then go on to win at Phoenix. But I've seen crazier things, and if it's going to happen, it's probably going to happen this year. It's crazy seeing Kyle Larson not in the round of eight. I mean, that just goes to show you how hard this, you know, round of 12 is. Talladega, Texas. I mean, it's a bummer, you know, but here's the thing. They haven't shown the speed that they did last year. But to see a guy with 11 top fives, you know, 16 top tens and two wins, not make it to the final, and arguably the best driver, not make it to the final eight is definitely interesting. So, I will actually wave the green-white checkered here for stage two. I will say this. Be sure to follow Todd, at Todd Furman on Twitter, myself, at ChrisWermy15, that's ChrisWerme15, and of course, follow the pod at BetTheBoardPod. Now, let's get into stage three here as we prep for Vegas. Wow, this show goes fast without Todd blabbering on. Kind of like that. This is great. Unfortunately, this is where Todd is amazing. When we talk about the weekend schedule, Friday at 8:35 p.m. Eastern, we have a late Xfinity practice and qualifying for the Elsco Uniforms 302. That will be on USA. Saturday at noon Eastern, we have Cup practice and qualifying for the South Point 400, also on USA. Then at 3 p.m. Eastern on Saturday, we have the Xfinity Elsco Uniforms 302 from LVMS, and that will be on NBC. We will go ahead and round out the weekend on Sunday. The start of the round of eight takes place at 2:30 Eastern with a Cup Series South Point 400. That will be on NBC as well. Wow, that was actually surprisingly easy. So maybe I don't need Todd that much. No, it'll be nice to have Todd back. He definitely does a great job of moderating this thing. And I appreciate his input sometime. Unless he calls me a dumbass like he did last week, but I'll get over it. Looking this week at Vegas, we have a mile and a half track. I think when it comes to looking at comparable tracks here at Vegas, I think you have to look at this from a super macro level and see what teams have been fast and what teams haven't been fast on mile and a halves. And I know that when you say something like, well, you just kind of back up, and I would say not even based on stats or even green flag speed, just with your eyeballs. If you've been watching this sport long enough, you can start to tell which teams have things figured out on mile and a half tracks and which teams don't. I think that that's the most important thing when you're looking at this week. Before we get into specific comp tracks, I just want to know who's had speed on these mile and a half tracks. And so I'll be looking at that metric, just all mile and a half tracks, whether they're high wear or not, whether they're momentum or you have to manage fall off. I'm just going to look at just the speed in general. When it comes to other comp tracks, I would say Kansas is the most recent comp track for sure. Fortunately, I'm not going to look at Texas. Texas was a little bit of an anomaly, and it just requires too much momentum. And Also, I think it's a good thing because the tires did not hold up as the sun set and those teams were going a little faster than anticipated. The loads in the corner were just too high and we were seeing tire failures. And I'm not saying that we didn't see any in Kansas, but I'll be sticking with the two Kansas races and the first Vegas race. But overall, kind of keeping in mind just speed on mile and a halfs first and foremost. The first Vegas race, for sure, obviously that's going to be your most highly correlated to a Vegas race. Weird. But you got to remember that teams have really tightened the gap on speed since that race. I mean, it almost seems like it was last year. You know, I would put some weight into this race and some into track history, but not too much more than we actually than what we saw in Kansas. I actually think that that's going to be a better indication of who's actually got speed in their race cars. Now, remember, this is also a new tire than we saw at the first Vegas race. We did see this same tire at Kansas and also Texas, which does have me not shaking in my boots, but it definitely has me a little concerned. So when it comes to tire comps, I definitely want to start this discussion with a quote from Greg Stucker, who's Goodyear's director of racing. He started this quote. I read this and I just kind of laughed to myself. "This has been an exciting year of change for NASCAR as we all work with the next gen car." Exciting? I mean, to quote Bill Pullman from Independence Day, exciting? Tires are falling. Wait, tires are failing out there. And I don't think exciting is the word I would use to describe it. Leave it up to me to have a typo on a quote that I was so excited to say. Anyway, it's neither here nor there. I don't think the word exciting is very accurate for this. I mean, you have Tony Stewart's comments. You have, safety issues with, you know, cars backing into the wall. And you have tires failing. I think exciting is maybe a political comment because I don't think it's been exciting. I think it's been hard for fans, and I'm hoping that, you know, this off season we can make some changes because I can't sit through another Texas and another Roval. That was not very fun for anyone. So now only using Kansas's week for those comps just because of the tire, and I'm going to put way more weight on the second Kansas race because the tire that they used was different than they used the first time around. But you know, obviously the banking is going to be similar, not exact, and hopefully we don't see the issues like we saw in Texas. I don't think we will, but you know, as long as this race stays during the day, it's going to be hot. Oh man, is it going to be hot. And you know, to start at 2:30 Eastern, that's 11:30 a.m. Pacific, I think that you'll see cars sliding around. I don't think you'll see as high a speeds as we saw with cooler temperatures, whether that was Texas or earlier at Vegas this year. I think you'll see these cars sliding around. Hopefully that promotes a little bit of fall off. And I think that there is a decrease in loads on this track because there's more banking. I'm not an expert on how the physics of a car work, but I'm pretty sure that NASCAR and Goodyear are not as concerned with these tire issues coming into Vegas, especially with the temperatures and the higher banking. So let's get into some manufacturers here. Let's look at the Chevys. So for some of the odds, we have Chase is 8-1, Reddick is 9-1, Larson is 9-1, and Chastain is 9-1. Outside of Reddick and Chastain recently, I mean, he did win at Texas, and Chastain early in the season, I have not seen the speed out of these teams like we've seen in the past. I don't think Larson's gone out there and dominated races, at least on ovals. Chase certainly hasn't done it on ovals. He's kind of been selectively fast. And Chastain, it was just early in the season. I mean, he's been, I'm not saying out to lunch, but he hasn't been up there leading laps, unless it was because of strategy. So, you know, I was listening to Door Bumper Clear. Those guys are awesome. I certainly recommend everybody pop in and listen to that podcast. they called up Tyler Reddick live on the podcast, and I couldn't believe that he thought he had a better chance of winning at Vegas than at Homestead. That was kind of shocking to me because I thought that his best chance to win would have been Homestead, but he seems to think it's Vegas. Maybe that's because he's coming off a Texas victory where he was really fast the last 100 laps of that race, and it's the same tire. But ultimately, I think that there's a lot more unknowns going into this Vegas race than the driving style that it takes to win at Homestead. I think he kind of encompasses that driving style that you need at Homestead. Whereas in Vegas, you know, you have to have a good setup and you have to have, you're going to need speed on the straights and in the corners. Where in Homestead, if you can manage tire fall off and you can rim ride, you can definitely make some hay up there. So kind of a head scratcher for me. All these guys, if I had to pick a guy that I think was maybe the best price, would have been that Chastain at 9-1. He did lead some laps earlier in the season there, and I wouldn't be shocked if he went out there and led some laps again this week. But as of now, when it comes to those particular Toyotas, I'm not exactly interested in anything there. And, you know, I just don't think that they've had the speed on the mile and a halves that we've seen from the Toyotas. So let's get into the Toyotas now. They've been the fastest on mile and a half, and it's not even close in my opinion. So if you look at Denny is 5.5-1, Chris Bell's 8-1, Truex is 12-1, Kyle Busch is 12-1, and Bubba's 15-1. Now, Denny's fast every week, you know, but he tends to have problems or find issues, whether it's with another driver or, you know, it's a speeding penalty or a loose wheel or whatever it may be. The thing is, he's able to recover nicely, but he likes to make mistakes later in the race. Whereas Chris Bell, he likes to make his mistakes early in the race and he likes to recover from them. So he's been the most consistent when it comes to finishes and being there at the end of races. Just look at last week. Yes, he was able to come down and take tires, and it was kind of a, you know, very low downside risk to take those tires, but he still had to go out there and pass the cars and win the race. So Denny's fast every week, can't get the finishes he deserves. Bell is the most consistent, but you know who the fastest cars on these tracks have been? It's been the 18 and the 19. Kyle Busch and Martin Truex Jr. have been the fastest guys on mile and a half tracks, in my opinion, and it's not even close. So it's just hard because they can't seem to get out of their own way. You know, I think the Denny price is way too short for the type of unpredictability we've seen in this sport so far. I mean, if you think about Chase last week was 5-1 at the Roval, and in some places 6-1. And now you're going to price Denny Hamlin on an oval at 5.5-1. No. Chase Elliott had a way better chance of winning the Roval last week than Denny has coming into this week. It's not even close. Now Denny could win the race, but if you're getting paid out at 5-1 or 5.5-1, that does not equal the risk that you were actually going to take on by betting him right now during the week. Could he win? Absolutely. But sometimes a price just isn't worth the risk, and this would be one of them. Now, when it comes to Martin Truex and Kyle Busch, those guys are priced at 12-1. The thing is, they haven't qualified especially well on similar tracks. So I do think that you'll be able to see a better price on Truex and certainly a better price on Kyle, who has just, he's been terrible at qualifying. On the three comp tracks I'm using, his average starting spot is 21st. And with Martin Truex Jr., it's 11th. So both of their finishes are much better than those starting spots. And I think that we'll see similar prices on them throughout the weekend, no matter how they look in practice, just because they haven't really looked great in practice and they haven't qualified well. But they do race once they get 10, 12, 15 laps on their tires. They seem to keep up the speed better than most other cars on the track, including their teammates in Chris Bell and Denny Hamlin. So although I do think that all of them will be super fast, I do think that the best value probably lies in the 18 or the 19. But you know what? Maybe they're paying too much of a price when it comes to their setups. and maybe their setups are too aggressive, and it's because of that that they have these issues where Kyle can't help himself but spin out. I mean, how many DNFs does he have from spinning out? I mean, it's like every week. So maybe the cars are a little bit too edgy. They might be fast, but they might be too tough to drive, and that's why they're not getting these finishes. Either way, I like to bet on fast cars, and I do like the 18 and the 19 prices more so than some of the other ones we've discussed. When it comes to the Fords, we've got Blaney's 10-1, Logano's 15-1, Harvick's 30-1, and Briscoe is 30-1. They just haven't shown much race speed outside of some decent qualifying efforts out of Cindric and Briscoe. If you just look at the starting spots, and I know that starting spots aren't everything, but you know, they certainly help, and they certainly indicate speed in your race car. Now, Austin Cindric has a great average starting spot on these three tracks with an average start of fifth place, which is awesome. However, he tends to struggle and isn't able to hold on, and his average finish is 14th. So, if you look at Chase Briscoe, his average starting spot is 9.7, which is better than Truex, Chastain, Byron, Blaney, Elliott, Logano, Bubba. So those guys are actually getting it done when it comes to qualifying. They're just not getting the finishes. Now, you look at a guy like Ryan Blaney, whose average start is 12.7 on these tracks, and his average finish is 19th. Now, he's definitely running trouble. You know, in that first Kansas race, he finished 36th because he got into it with Brad Keselowski. Or no, he got it 36th at Vegas because he got into it with Brad Keselowski. But he did have speed in his race car, and then he finished 12th and 9th at the two other Kansas races. So a little bit of an externality there. We're probably looking at about a 10th place finish for Blaney, which for him probably isn't enough. I would say if you were to give him 10th place and like 5 stage points, I think he'd rather run the race and see if he can do better himself. When it comes to some of these other guys, Kevin Harvick, his average starting spot's 20th and his average finish is 21st. I know that he struggled a little bit in that first Kansas race, and he had a decent run at Vegas, but that second Kansas race finished 36th, the first Kansas race 15th. Obviously he was leading when he hit the wall, and so I don't know. Here's the deal with Kevin Harvick. He's going to look slow in practice. He's not going to qualify well, but sure enough, when there's 60 or 70 laps to go, the closer will be in the top 5 and he'll be hunting for position. So I don't expect much out of the Fords. I think that they'll be very opportunistic, try to get points wherever they can, run a really conservative race, because there are a little bit of unknowns with this right side tire, you know, having issues in the past. I think you're going to see teams really take tires every time, or at least play very conservatively on them. I don't think that guys were able to maintain track position on two tires or no tire stops at the first Vegas race. And with, tire failures, I think that you're going to want to take tires every time you can. Now, it's not like you're going to get 12 sets of tires this week either. So they might have to ration tires a little bit, but I think you'll see guys get aggressive towards the end of stages to make sure that they're actually getting points. Whereas, some guys that are no longer in the playoffs, like Larson, Suarez, Reddick, and some of the Gibbs boys, they might actually stay out on old tires. So that way they have 6, 7, 8 lap fresher tires after they pit. Even though they lost track position, they'll be able to be the aggressors. Whereas the guys that pitted and took tires and maybe were able to win a stage, they're just trying to take points. So I don't know that that's going to really factor into how you handicap the race or the race winner per se. I just think it'll be a little bit of strategy that's played within the race. Now, I'm going to wave the green, white checkered here on stage 3. I hope I didn't forget anything. But again, you can go ahead and follow me on Twitter at ChrisWerme15. That's ChrisWerme15. You can follow Todd Furman at Twitter at Todd Furman. And always follow the podcast at BetTheBoardPod. Now, last week we went 1-1 in our best bets for the week. And this week, kind of tough. We used to pick these top 10s, but DraftKings has done a terrible job of hanging decent numbers. I mean, they've got some minus 400s. Let's see here. Yeah, you have minus 400 for Denny Hamlin, top 10. Now, if you're going to lay that price, you sure as hell better offer an against price. So we're not going to play any top 10s because they're flat out stealing over there. But there is a bet that I do like, and it's actually going to be a manufacturer bet. I don't know which Toyota is going to be the fastest this week, but I anticipate them qualifying well and running up front. I think you could see them run 1 through 4 for a decent part of the race. So that's why my best bet of the week is a Toyota plus 150 ticket to win the race. I think that they're going to dominate, and I fully anticipate there to be a Toyota in victory lane. I just don't know which one. You know, the last time a Toyota was in victory lane on an oval was Bubba Wallace. So it could be Bubba. It could be Kyle. It could be Truex. It could be Denny. It could be Bell. But I certainly don't think it'll be Ty Gibbs, if that matters to anybody. And that's the show for the week. I hope you guys enjoyed it. And again, we'll have Todd next week. And good luck to everybody this weekend. We will talk to you later.
Outstanding work, as always, from Chris. There's nobody better to break down the race. And as the stakes continue to climb higher, we can only hope that we see some of the best on-track product that we have all season. With Vegas, then to Homestead, then to Martinsville, and the final four that'll go to Phoenix right in Chris's backyard before we crown the 2022 NASCAR champion. Best of luck with all of your investments this weekend from Las Vegas Motor Speedway, and hopefully we'll see you at the window.